Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studio. Later on Newsmakers, we will be covering the race for the 96th Assembly District here in Wisconsin. It's primary season, and today we're going to be talking to the Democrats running for their party's nomination in the 96th, and then next week we'll be talking to the Republicans running for their party's nomination in the 96th. But first, we're talking about, we've talked about housing on this show before and what a crunch it is, and especially how difficult it is for new first-time homeowners or especially low-income homeowners to enter the housing market and get out of that rental cycle where they're constantly paying money into somebody else's dream. And joining us to talk about that is Kaya Fox, who's Executive Director of Habitat for Humanity of the La Crosse area. Kaya, welcome to Newsmakers today.
Wonderful, Ezra. Thank you so much for having me.
Certainly. And I'm interested to talk to you because Habitat for Humanity is looking now for its next slate of homeowners. So talk to me a little bit about that program and what kind of people you're looking for to become homeowners.
Absolutely. So Habitat for Humanity La Crosse area is actually looking to select 5 future homeowners. So this is the largest number of homeowners we've ever looked for at one given time. So we're very excited to be able to offer these opportunities to families in our community. And the Habitat Homeowner Program is just a wonderful way for families that normally wouldn't qualify for a mortgage due to their income level. And, you know, we all know that the housing market has kind of exploded over the last year or so. And so that gap for low-income families to make their way into homeownership has just gotten wider and wider. So Habitat for Humanity tries to level the playing field and provide homeownership opportunities for hardworking low-income families in our community. So we have 5 homes that we'll be building over the next year. And so we'll be partnering with 5 different families in our community. They'll be providing up to 400 sweat equity hours, building their homes alongside our staff and our volunteers. So we're excited because we know, you know, we're going to get far more applications than we have homes available. But we are going to be changing the lives in just a few short months of 5 families in our community and giving them the opportunity to have a safe place, an affordable place, to build wealth for them and their families, to have that sense of security that homeownership provides. And then also for our community, you know, homeownership is very important for strong and vibrant communities so that, you know, they have that sense of ownership in the place that they live. So we're really happy to be able to have 5 brand new homes and 5 future homeowners.
Now, you talked more generally about people who might not qualify for a traditional mortgage or people who have had trouble entering the market of home ownership. But are there more specific terms as far as who would actually qualify to become part of a program like this?
Absolutely. So Habitat for Humanity, you know, targets those families that normally wouldn't qualify for a traditional mortgage, or if they did, the amount of mortgage that they would qualify would not get them into a safe home. So we look at families that are under 80% of the county median income. We look for families that are, you know, ready to be homeowners, ready to afford and maintain a home. So we do have some underwriting qualifications that we go through just like any regular lender, because we want people to be successful homeowners. But we also look at other things that most lenders don't look at, which is that need for affordable housing. So, you know, we actually go into the homes and see what those specific barriers are, because we want to select families that have the greatest need. And those are the families that we offer homes to.
We've talked about this before, but Habitat is not giving away homes here, are they?
I think that's a huge misconception that we see in the community a lot, is that, you know, they build the homes with us and that means we give the homes away to them. And that's not the truth at all. We actually do an appraisal of the house and figure out its value after the home's completed. And we sell the home to the future homeowner for that full appraised value. The difference that we offer at Habitat that allows to kind of bridge that gap is that our mortgage loans are 0% interest. And that's that game changer that allows families that normally wouldn't be able to afford a mortgage payment to get into a home. But they pay full homeowner's insurance, full property taxes on the home. You know, they are, in all intents and purposes, just a typical homeowner in our communities.
So if this is ringing some bells for our listeners, and someone feels like they might like to apply to be one of those 5 homeowners, what do they have to do?
It's a really simple process. They can go to our website at habitatlacrosse.org, and our checklist and full application are on our website. They can download that. They can also stop here at the Habitat Restore and pick up an application, and applications are due on September 2nd.
And tell me that website one more time.
HabitatLacrosse.org.
And I suppose that's a good place for anybody to go for information. I know a lot of members of our community volunteer on Habitat projects or give or shop at the Restore. And is that a good way for them to get involved?
Absolutely. So all of our information about the really fun and unique volunteer opportunities we have at Habitat are also on our website. Our Habitat volunteer application is right there to fill out online. And there's just so many different ways that you can uniquely get involved. And, you know, building homes is one of the biggest ones. You know, it's over 175 volunteers and over 2,500 volunteer hours to build each Habitat home. And it's just this sense of community. You get to work alongside the families that you are literally helping. It's just a unique, beautiful, wonderful way to give of your time and talents in the community.
So let's say somebody's never volunteered on a Habitat project before. They've got some time, and it sounds like an idea they'd be willing to participate in, but hey, I don't know how to build a house.
I think that's what's so cool about Habitat is you don't need to know anything about construction in order to volunteer in our construction sites. We have excellent staff and volunteers that are there with you all day long to show you. So not only can you give back, but you can really learn some cool, you know, construction skills while volunteering with Habitat for Humanity.
Kaya Fox is Executive Director of Habitat for Humanity of the La Crosse area. Kaya, thank you very much for joining us on Newsmakers.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you want to get in touch with our show, you can email us. That's newsmakers@wpr.org. newsmakers@wpr.org. When we return, we'll be covering the 96th Assembly right here on Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, it's Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest Wisconsin studio in La Crosse. It is election season, and in particular, the primary elections are coming up here in Wisconsin on Tuesday, August 9th. And today on Newsmakers, we are speaking with the Democratic candidates, those vying for the Democratic nomination in the 96th Assembly District, which encompasses Monroe County, Vernon County, and Crawford County here in southwestern Wisconsin. And joining me now is one of those two candidates. I should say the candidates are Jane Swigum and Mark Fritchie. And Jane Swigum joins me now on Newsmakers. Jane, thanks a lot for joining us.
Delighted to be here.
So for those who are unfamiliar, tell us about yourself. What's your background, profession, other things that you think people might be interested to know?
Well, I am from Gaze Mills. I was raised here, and I live here today on the family farm. I am a registered nurse, and I've been doing that for 22 years. I was an English teacher before that, so I've got a little bit of that background as well. I am married to my lovely husband, Ed, and we live here on top of the ridge in Gaze Mills.
You're living on the farm in the district, and so agriculture is certainly important, and we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the economy and education and everything else. But I want to start with priorities. If you're elected to this office, if you make it through the primary, make it through the general election, and then assume office in January, what would your top priority be as a legislator?
Well, I am a registered nurse, and so healthcare is incredibly important to me. I take care of people in an emergency department, and I see every day how the lack of access, the lack of insurance, medical debt, all keep people away from healthcare. Healthcare also includes women's reproductive healthcare. And I have to admit that one of the reasons why I'm running is because the current representative is not representing 61% of us here in Wisconsin. 61% of us believe that abortion should be safe, legal, and accessible. And yet he and his Republican majority used their gavel in, gavel out method of obstructing democracy. They left the constituents hanging. We were not allowed to have discussion or debate. It was just open and closed, and that's all there is. We have to get people out of office who are not representing us here in this district, and I will be very happy to do that.
So I want to turn our attention to the economy. A lot of people are really feeling it at the moment. We've got potentially record inflation. Some signs of that slowing a little bit, but really, really dramatic inflation. What steps can be taken at the state level? Can anything be done by the state legislature to help ease people's fears of looming recession?
Well, one thing that could be done, which has been completely avoided by the Republican majority, is accept the monies from the federal government to expand Medicaid. We have so many people who earn just too much to get medical coverage through Medicaid. And if we were to take those monies, we could increase the financial, we would have to increase the amount of money a person can make and still get Medicaid. And we could do that with those monies. That would be one thing that would make things easier for a lot of people here. Another thing that can be done is to make sure that we are actually attracting people and businesses to this area. And one reason why people don't come here is because our housing is not affordable and it is not available. We can help small communities do what Gaze Mills did in the flood recovery movement. They worked very closely with a group called Community Development out of Prairie du Chien that helped them to get grants and whatnot in order to finance housing. And they did it in a very unusual way. They have got apartments, and some of them are income-based. And others are just straight, this is what you pay for your rent. This allows for a mix of people to live in these facilities. And the not in my backyard feeling kind of gets better when you know that your neighbors are also people you've probably known forever, but there will be people who need a little more assistance there as well. So we need to help these communities get those things rolling. And if you're interested, shout out to Gaze Mills. You can buy a lot in the town to build a home for a mere $1,000. So we need to help other communities have this kind of success with drawing in people. And then when you have people, you will have businesses.
Now, you've not been shy so far about calling out those across the aisle in the Republican Party, but a lot of people are concerned, not only, you know, that level of honesty with each other, but also about finding ways that you can cooperate even if you disagree with them on other issues. So where do you see opportunities for bipartisan cooperation on the big issues? Natural resources, PFAS in your drinking water, divided government with competing goals, those kinds of things.
Every representative should be focusing on people. And when you focus on people, you will help them to get to maintain and improve our water system, to maintain and improve our air quality, and to help eliminate the dependence on fossil fuels. We need clean, renewable energy. We need clean water, and we need clean air. Everybody agrees on that. Then you need to start working together to see what can we come up with to make sure that we leave this planet better than we found it. And I don't care who it is, Republican, Democrat, whatever. We want our kids and our grandkids to have it better than we had. And I think that is something that will pull people together. When you focus on people, on the humanity of the people that you represent, you cannot go wrong.
You talked in your priorities statement, you talked about the abortion issue already, but Roe versus Wade has been overturned by the United States Supreme Court. That Dobbs decision kind of puts abortion issue back in the hands of states, the state government, state legislators, that kind of thing. In Wisconsin, the law that takes effect due to the overturn of Roe versus Wade is pretty old. And does not take into consideration all the ways in which that issue, discussion around that issue, might have changed over the last 100 years or so. So, what specifically is your hope in as a potential state legislator on in terms of what law should exist? Either prohibiting or, in your case, I'm assuming allowing greater access to abortion.
Well, let's get on it. So with this, sending it back to the states, we have now made women second-class citizens depending upon where they live. If at the very moment of conception, a woman here in Wisconsin loses her right to have a legal, safe abortion, we are second-class citizens. There's no two ways about it. You should not be refused the ability to cross state lines. No one should know if you're seeking health care in another state. There are so many things wrong with what has just happened in the last couple of months in regard to equal rights for people. There is no other medical condition that upon diagnosis, you lose your right to decide what you're going to do about it. No other medical condition. So it is time for us to make sure that we are as advanced as our other first world nations, that we allow women this access, that we make sure that there is funding available for things like Planned Parenthood, which helps people who are in poverty, who have no insurance, to get good quality birth control. When you take away that funding, which is something that that Mr. Oldenburg has put in one of his flyers that came in the mail, you are causing unwanted, unplanned pregnancies. You cannot have it both ways. You must help women and men, because men can go to Planned Parenthood as well, to get this kind of health care. Birth control is one of those things that, frankly, since sexual activity is a biological function, I think it is ridiculous to assume that we are animals, will not do that based upon different rules, laws. However, we need something that will help us plan our families without the interference of the government. And that is what liberty is. I kind of feel like liberty has been a word that's hijacked when it appeals to keeping the government out of things that they think makes it too big. Well, it's getting way too small. It's getting inside women's bodies, and we need to adjust to that. We need to fix it, and we need to make sure that no woman ever has to think about having a back alley abortion. Those are so incredibly dangerous, and there are so many ways that we can help women. It's time to look at this differently.
Moving to the issue of education, strong schools are an important part of a healthy economy. We were talking about beating recession earlier, beating inflation, and one of those keys to economic mobility is giving people the knowledge base that'll help them be successful in life. What should legislators do to ensure that students have access to high-quality primary education?
We need to make sure that Wisconsin is no longer hemorrhaging educators to our outlying states. We are losing educators. We are losing people who are recently graduated and trained as teachers. We are losing experienced teachers to Minnesota, Iowa, and Illinois. And why is that? Because they are states with strong teachers unions. In 2011, Wisconsin cut off its nose to spite its face by removing those unions from our educators. And it may not have happened all at once, but it is getting to the point where our educators here are not being well represented. And if you want to have quality education for kids, you need to make quality employment for those teaching them. So it is time to reverse Act 10. We are suffering here in this state because we were short-sighted.
The economy, we talked about the economy earlier in terms of people's personal economy, inflation, that kind of thing. Where you live, your district is basically entirely in farm country, and that is a whole other part of America's economy, of Wisconsin's economy. Talk about the issues that are affecting farmers around you, people who are part of the agricultural economy in Wisconsin, and what you want to do as a legislator to stand up for their needs and represent them.
Well, farmers, and my dad and his family have been farmers for decades. Farmers have always been the good stewards of the land. And we need to make sure that we are helping farmers to have sustainable products, sustainable farming practices. Those people who are already doing it should be getting some sort of tax break incentive for doing that. And we should also be helping farmers to do this who are not currently doing it by offering them financial incentives as well. You cannot tell someone to do a farming practice that is going to cut their income without somehow helping them to do it.
The some of the concerns that one of the people running in the Republican primary had raised was regulations, environmental type regulations that are put on farmers that make farming less practical. What are some of the things that you see that are put on farmers that are unpaid for, as you said?
Well, farmers are becoming single crop farmers where they are farming from one ridge top to the next. And it's because they are not getting great prices on what they are doing. But it is a business. And if that business is contributing to our environment going down the tubes with having problems with our water, our air, and the like, we need to make sure that they are being somehow helped. And the other thing that I always come back to is healthcare. I can't tell you how many of the farmers that I know are working second jobs just to make ends meet and to have healthcare. If we could get healthcare as something that everybody has in this state, it would take a huge burden off of farmers. It would take a huge burden off of employers. This is not something that should be making money on people. Our health is our most important asset. And until we start to treat people as though we think they are important, that their water is more important, that their air is more important, and that the energy they use is more important than any business, we are failing people around us.
You've highlighted some of the ways in which you differ from Republicans in general, and the Republican incumbent to this office in particular. But right now, you are running in the Democratic primary, which is going to be on Tuesday, August 9th, and you're running against fellow Democrat Mark Fritchie. So I want to give you an opportunity in the final moments of our conversation to talk about what separates you from him, what separates your candidacy from his candidacy.
Well, I know Mark, I've met him via phone. We've actually spoken on the phone, and we have very similar beliefs in regard to all the things that you and I have been talking about today. I am not here to bash Mr. Fritchie. He is a good person, and I think his heart is in the right place, but he is a different kind of Democrat. I am a different kind of candidate. I have been a nurse for 22 years, and I have been a tenacious advocate for my patients. And I mean tenacious. I will not back down if I know something isn't right. I will pursue until we get a solution. And that very tenacity carries over beautifully to being a representative for the people here. I am not concerned about climbing the political ladder. I'm from Gays Mills. I live in Gays Mills. I'm going to die in Gays Mills. I don't really care to climb up to go to state senator and then congressman or governor. I just am not interested in that. I am interested in the people around me. My parents instilled in me the belief that you help your neighbors. And that is all that I want to do. I'm never going to be rich. I am never going to be a professional politician. I am never going to stop being a nurse. Nursing is my vocation. This is a service that you do for your neighbors. And I believe that is what makes the difference with me. I am not doing this to climb a ladder, to gain power. It's nothing like that. I am a different kind of candidate, and it is about time that we get sick of the status quo and start sticking people into office who are going to make a difference. And I will do that. Mark my words, I will make a difference.
That's Jane Swigum. She is running for the Democratic nomination in the 96th Assembly District in southwestern Wisconsin. That primary election is Tuesday, August 9th. She will face fellow Democrat Mark Fritchie. The winner of that election will go on to the general election on Tuesday, November 8th, and will face the winner of the Republican contest for the 96th Assembly. Jane Swigum, thank you very much for joining us today on Newsmakers.
Thank you very much, Ezra.
If you'd like to hear this conversation again or check out some of our interviews with other candidates in this race and other races, you can find them all online. Newsmakers, it's WPR.org/newsmakers. That's WPR.org/newsmakers. And one more plug before we go. You can find more election-oriented coverage from Wisconsin Public Radio at WPR.org/election22. That's WPR.org/election22. As for our show, we'll be back right after this. It's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studio, and we're talking about elections this week on Newsmakers. In particular, we're focusing on the Democratic primary in the 96th Assembly. Next week, we're going to be listening to the candidates from the Republican primary in the 96th, so stay tuned for that. Earlier today, you heard from Democratic candidate Jane Swigum. Now we're going to hear from her opponent, Democratic candidate Mark Fritchie, who is running in the Democratic primary, which will be October 9th, Tuesday, October 9th. The winner of that primary will face the winner of the Republican primary in the general election on Tuesday, November 8th. So make sure you put that on your calendar, too. Now we'll welcome to Newsmakers Mark Fritchie, who is a Democratic candidate running for the Democratic nomination in the 96th Assembly. Mark, thank you very much for joining us on Newsmakers.
Great. Thanks, Ezra, for having me.
Certainly. Now, I want to give you a chance first off to let our listeners, let your prospective voters get to know you a little bit. Tell us, where you're from and your profession and anything else you think might be relevant to just let people know who you are.
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up in Eastman, Wisconsin, graduated from Prairie du Chien. I now live with my family in the town of Tomah. I'm a fifth generation veteran. I have over 25 years of leadership experience in public service. I've served at all levels of government, including former Wisconsin Governor Jim Doyle's Citizen Corps Council and Homeland Security, his working group after 9/11. I've served as an Army officer, an IT and environmental project manager, a college faculty member, emergency services director at Fort McCoy, and emergency management director at Dodge County. So I have a vast array of experience across all spectrums of government.
Well, if you are successful in this primary, let's assume that you are, and then let's assume that you take the next step and become successful in the general election on November 8th and eventually become the assembly representative from the 96th. What would be your top priority upon assuming office?
So my top priority would be to reach out to the district, to talk to them, to have town halls. That's what a representative does. It's not top down driven by special interests. It's bottom up politics, grassroots, from the people in the district, the constituents, to tell me what are their issues so that I can help them. And obviously talking already with some of the constituents, some of the big issues are the overturn of Roe v. Wade and a woman's right to choose. And I believe in a woman's right to choose. I believe that's a healthcare issue. I believe that is a private and moral decision that should be protected by the 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. I have two daughters, and, they're afraid right now of what's happening, what's going to happen to them, what's going to happen to their rights, what's going to happen in the future. And I just don't believe that the government needs to be in my daughter's uteruses.
So moving to the economy, people are really concerned right now with the way economic concerns are affecting their pocketbooks. They're having to spend a lot more money on things like gas and food. Things other than gas and food are inflating at some record amounts that we've seen. Is there anything that state government can do to address fears of recession? What can the legislature do regarding inflation?
Well, yeah, people are hurting right now. Obviously, we're paying more at the pump, paying more in the grocery store. From a state level, I would reach out to my colleagues across the aisle even and come up with some ideas, look at some economic experts and look at ways that we can make lives better for the constituents of the 96, whether that is to provide more economic dollars to invest in some businesses in the district to get jobs going. And that's one of the nice things is there is jobs. So it's not like there is not jobs, but at least there is jobs in the district. And I would look at ways to be able to bring state funding and incentives to the district to help alleviate the inflation that we're seeing today.
Let's talk about the agriculture economy, because you're the seat you're running for, the 96th, is in Monroe, Vernon, Crawford counties. Most of that area is farm country, and ag economy really important to your constituents. Talk about what the legislature should be doing to protect Wisconsin farmers, and in particular, southwestern Wisconsin farmers.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I grew up in a rural farm community in Eastman and Seneca and Waseca, Crawford County. So I understand a lot what's going on here, and they've been just, it's been a difficult time for these farmers, especially family farmers, because, back in the Eisenhower day, this ag secretary said, go big or go big or get out. And then they followed with government regulations that pretty much forced the small farmer out. And I think, you know, I came from a large farm family. The main farm was on Wall Ridge, and several of my uncles and aunts are still farmers, dairy farmers, and then also crop farmers. So they still live in the area. So I'm there to help them. And I think what we need to do is take a look at how we can invest in our farmers. What are some things that they can do? You know, there's been talk about the CAFO down in Waseca, concentrated animal hog farm there. And so we need to look at those options and see, hey, you know, they're creating jobs in the area. But at the same time, we have to make smart decisions, look at public-private partnerships. That way we may ensure that we keep clean water in the area, and then there's not significant runoff that damages streams or drinking water. And so I would look at farmers to be receive training and grants to help them build farms, and but yet maintain the environmental integrity and protect our watershed.
One of the other things that you talked about was going to Madison and working across the aisle, and I want to talk about bipartisan cooperation, because it's something that you don't see a lot of in our state legislature. You see a lot of finger pointing, a lot of you know, whether it's the leadership, not giving any of the opposition's ideas a chance to thrive, or whether it's the minority party pointing fingers and name calling at the leadership, or something in between that. Are there opportunities to set those differences aside? Where do you see opportunities for bipartisan cooperation on the big issues?
Well, exactly, Ezra. I think I've had experience, some of my past occupations involved collaboration as an emergency management director for Dodge County, and collaborating with police, fire, physical security, EMS, and conquering things that we need to get done, like improving our communications in the county. So look forward to these opportunities. This is why I'm running, because I've seen that we are so far left and so far right that they've left us in the middle out of the equation. And so I see areas that we can talk about is economics, and increase our capability and improve jobs and wages in those areas. It's gonna be tough. This is gonna be a fight, and we need to work together for the better good of the state. And so I see things, maybe women's rights. I will push for whatever we need to do to give the woman the right to choose. And if the Republicans want to fight on that, you know, hopefully we can find some common ground in that. But, you know, I'm willing to go to bat for that.
It's you brought that up in your opening comments, and you bring it up again now, and it is my next question. Now that the Supreme Court has overturned Roe versus Wade through the Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization decision, what action should the legislature take? Because now the prevailing law in Wisconsin is well over 100 years old, and may or may not adequately address advances in scientific understanding, or may or may not address just changes in how the public discourse on the issue of abortion has evolved over the last 100 years. What action should the legislature take?
You're exactly right, Ezra. This thing's over 100 years old. It's before women even had the right to vote. So we need to take a look at this law and really narrow it down of what are the Republicans looking for in this? Because the Democrats, we want to make it so women have the right to choose, that they have access to health care, that we fund Planned Parenthood that's not only looking at abortion, but also women's cancer screenings, birth control, all those types of things. And my candidate on the Republican side, he defunded all of that. And so we need to really take a look at this bill We need to make it fit what Wisconsin wants, the majority. What do they want? Not just tailored to the special interests in the minority. I saw a recent survey that said 71% of people agree with same-sex marriage. And but yet now we're seeing the Republicans are looking at changing that also.
On the topic of education, so many people, their kids are in public schools of one stripe or another, and obviously the legislature plays a key role in making sure that those schools are funded. What has to happen to make sure that every kid in the education system has access to the high quality education that's going to really set them up for success in life?
I think we really need to look at these vouchers and whether they're being effective or not, whether we really even need them. I think we need to reinvest in education. I believe that teachers and staff need to be able to go back to the table to collective bargain with the administration and everything and bring ideas on how we can educate our kids better, look at ways that we can make it more efficient. Is the curriculum we're teaching, is that's acceptable, as in, you know, to look at the data and say, hey, this curriculum in other areas have been very successful. Kids are receiving higher scores. So we need to really look at all of that and ensure that our kids are getting the best education in the world.
Your opponent mentioned specifically repealing Act 10. Is that something that you would support? What fallout has there been from that, or is there anything of it that's redeemable in your mind as a Democratic candidate?
I think Act 10 has destroyed our education system, as far as we lost great teachers that have left the district, that have gone to other jobs across the river in Iowa and Minnesota, because they're treated better, they're receiving a better retirement. And they're allowed access to more resources. My wife's a special education teacher. So, you know, she sees a lot of mental health issues, and we need to invest in mental health because I think that's tied to a lot of these issues that we see with gun violence and those other issues that we see in these schools.
So I want to give you an opportunity. Now, I've been asking the questions here, but I want you to frame your candidacy, not in terms of looking ahead to the ultimate Republican opponent, perhaps the incumbent, perhaps his challenger, but in terms of this Democratic primary, Tuesday, August 9th, the election that you have Mark Fritchie against Jane Swigum, who is your Democratic opponent in this race. What separates you from your opponent in this Democratic primary?
I think, you know, Jane's a great candidate. We both have the same mission. The mission is to flip the seat to the Democrats. And where Jane and I are different is she's more left. She even claims to be a liberal on her Facebook page. I'm a moderate conservative Democrat, old grassroots Democrat. And so I'm more left center of the middle. And so I want to go back to supporting rural America, Americans and farmers, and really listening to the people, because that's what I'm so fed up with, and why I decided to run is because we seem to be so far left and so far right, it's left the majority in the middle out of the equation. And so I hope I can bring back that grassroots Democrat, rural area support, and really look at the values that we used to have back in the day and really bring people together. Because I promise that I will represent the people of the 96 and not just vote along party lines.
You've mentioned a couple times yourself as being more moderate. Are there specific policy issues that illustrate that, where you have disagreed with the more left-leaning portion of your party?
Well, I guess one of the big things is, you know, I'm moderate when it comes to social issue. So I'm for same-sex marriage, which obviously the left is for also. I think the biggest differences might be under responsible gun ownership. So I believe in the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment says that you should have the right to bear arms in a legal way, right? Or the other part of it is, you know, as part of a state militia. And so I'm for keeping our guns. Nobody's going to take away our guns, okay? However, we need to look at things are different today, and we need to look at ways of keeping the guns out of the hands of felons, domestic abusers, and people with mental health issues. And so a lot of people on the far left just want to get rid of guns, and I do not support that whatsoever. I grew up hunting and fishing in Crawford County. That's, you know, I have deep roots in that with family. And you know, those are some of the things that I will always treasure. And we need people that are lawful and responsible gun owners need to be able to keep the right to own a gun.
That's Mark Fritchie. He is running for the Democratic nomination in the 96th Assembly District here in southwestern Wisconsin. Mark, thank you very much for being on Newsmakers today. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Ezra. Really appreciate the opportunity.
Of course, this is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this interview again, if you missed part of it, if you missed our conversation with Mark's opponent, Jane Swigum, the other Democrat in the August 9th primary, you can find that and all the rest of our Newsmakers conversations at WPR.org/newsmakers. Last week, we aired a debate between the Democratic candidates in Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. That's online. You can hear that as well on our election coverage page. That's WPR.org/election22. WPR.org/election22. And as I mentioned, coming up next week, the Republican candidates for the Republican nomination in the 96th Assembly are going to be right here on Newsmakers as well. That's our show for today. I hope you join us again next time for another Newsmakers. In the meantime, if you want to get in touch with me, send an email along. It's newsmakers@WPR.org. That's newsmakers@WPR.org. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio.